wasn't he devilishly handsome? Coal black hair, dark brows framing eyes that were as blue as the Atlantic. And didn't his eyes sparkle and mesmerise me from the moment I saw him? And that smile as he wended his way across the dance floor. 'Twas as if time was standing still. He offered me his hand, and as I stepped into his arms, it felt as if that moment would define the rest of my life. At least that's how I described him anyway, when I was back in the nurse's home and the other girls were grilling me about the tall, handsome lad who danced with me all evening and walked me home. And did you kiss? They wanted to know, agog with curiosity. Sure, the truth was far more mundane. He was a Connemara man, fresh off the boat and living in digs while he found a job for himself on the sites. He'd only gone to the dance that night because his friend persuaded him that there might be a few nice Irish nurses there to take the edge off the homesickness. And instead you found me? I joked. And he replied, I did, and I've forgotten about home already. We didn't kiss that first evening, nor the second. I could tell that, like myself, he didn't have a great deal of knowledge about the ways of love and was learning as he went along. Ah, but he had a romantic streak, despite his inexperience, and he could weave a story in spellbinding fashion. He told me his surname was Keneally and that his family was descended from seals. That's why you can see the ocean in me eyes, he teased. 'Twas true that if I held his gaze for long enough, it felt like I was being pulled deep beneath the waves. Then I'd burst out laughing. Would you go way out of that with your stories? And the spell would be broken. We started going steady to the pictures and the dances. Sometimes, as a special treat, we'd hit the bright lights of Soho, where we'd walk hand in hand through the fashionable throngs, feeling like we'd stepped onto the set of a movie. And such was the speed of our courtship, I wasn't even aware how far I'd fallen, until the other girls pointed it out. Ah, would you look at her, all dreamy-eyed, they teased. It must be love. Love, is that what it was? The butterflies flittering in me stomach at the sight of him, and the way my body quivered when we kissed. I've never felt anything like it before, nor since. I knew I had to tell me ma back home about this man who'd captured me heart. But how to begin? I wrote her a letter, describing how he worked on the building sites and had dreams of one day of running his own firm. I told her he was kind and gentle, that he made me laugh and treated me with respect, and how I was certain that she'd love him too whenever they'd meet. Her response was sharp and clear. I implore you not to throw your life away on some penniless navvy, she wrote. After everything I went through to get you a proper education, was it all a waste of time and money? Stop this silliness now, before you end up as damaged goods. This she underlined for emphasis, but I'd no idea what she meant. Think carefully about the decision you make, if you want me to remain, and she signed off coldly, your loving mother. I was heart-scalded. Did she think I was some onshack incapable of making the right choice? Or did her small-town Irish snobbery run so deep that she believed a decent man with aspirations wasn't good enough for a daughter? When he asked if my mother had given her blessing, I couldn't bring myself to tell him about her cruel words. Who knows how things might have turned out if circumstances hadn't brought matters to the head. We'd gone to Brighton for the weekend, just the two of us. It felt deliciously illicit, and maybe for me it was an act of rebellion against me ma. We spread a blanket across the pebbles on the beach and lay beneath the July sunshine, its warm rays caressing our pale Irish skin. Later, we checked into a guest house under the name of Mr. and Mrs. Smith. I'm sure the landlady had us sussed. And that's when it happened. It was only the once, but that's all it takes. We returned to London on the train the next day, basking in the afterglow. And even before we'd said goodbye at the station, I knew that something inside me felt different. 'Twasn't long before a doctor confirmed what I'd already guessed. And when I broke the news to him a few days later in the park, he was ecstatic. "A baby!" he whooped and started dancing around the bench whilst I remained seated, my hands firmly fixed in my lap. "Well, there's only one thing for it," he said. And he got down on one knee, right there in front of the whole world, and he asked me to marry him. What could I say? Me ma's words rang heavy in me ears. "It's all so fast, can I think about it?" He looked as if I'd slapped him, but he stood up slowly, dusted himself off, said very little for the rest of the afternoon. Things had not gone unnoticed back at the nurse's home. A few days after the proposal, Sister Josephine called me into her office. With little preamble, she asked me straight away if I was pregnant. My open mouth and scarlet face gave the game away. "You're one of our finest nurses, Kathleen, with a bright future ahead of you. What were you thinking, getting yourself into this situation?" I told her that he'd asked me to marry him. "I think it's too late for that. What are you now, 3 months gone?" I nodded. "Have you thought about whether this young man is really the right one for you? I mean, you are still so young, far too soon to be settling for the first fellow who flatters you." I didn't argue back. She laid out her plan as if it had been preordained. I've wondered since if someone from home hadn't a hand in it. I was to leave at the end of the week. Sister Josephine would make the arrangements. No, I didn't need to worry. My mother would not be told. The hospital would be informed that I'd gone back to Ireland for urgent family business. The baby would be registered under a false name, so that the sin could not be traced back to the sinners, and given to a good Catholic home. I'd be able to start afresh and finish my training the following year. And if all this seemed too uneasy, there was a catch. "One more thing," she said before dismissing me. "That young man, under no circumstances must you tell him where you are going or what you are about to do. It is the best for all concerned." Did I have a choice? Does anyone at 19 years of age with the shame of destitution hanging over them? I'll always regret not saying goodbye to him or explaining why I made this decision. I was whisked away in the dead of night to a bleak and lonely place with no forwarding address for him to trace me. By the time I returned a year later, he was gone. No one knew where. There was a rumour of America. Maybe if I tried, I could have found him. I never did meet anyone else. I suppose that's the thing about finding true love and then losing it. Nothing can ever take its place. Not a day has gone by since I haven't thought about him. Or you, my dearest daughter. You were with me for the first 9 weeks of your life before I handed you over, and I could see that you had the ocean in you too, with your dark blue eyes and black silky hair. And now here you are at last, travelling across the miles and years to find me, just at the point where I'd given up hope. Isn't the internet incredible? I only wish it had been around half a century before. So much time we've lost over the decades. I do so hope we can make up for it, and maybe someday the magic of science and DNA will help us find your father too.
Selkie was written by Antoinette McGovern and is the runner-up entry in Green Curtain Theatre's Love Competition for New Writing, held in 2019. It was performed by Anne Curtis. Selkie is a Green Curtain Theatre production and was recorded in February 2019.